We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Kelly.
Coming up on this week's Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, brought to you by Shelter Insurance, Tigers basketball coach Konzo Martin. First, though, this message from Shelter Insurance.
Your voice lets him know he's safe. Shelter Insurance does the same for you. Roadside assistance is now included with your auto policy. So if your car leaves you stranded, just call and we'll take care of you while you take care of what's most important. Find out more at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter. Some restrictions apply.
With Missouri's football team enjoying a bye week, we thought it would be a great chance to share with you a special event. A few weeks ago, Mizzou basketball coach Konzo Martin made an appearance at an event in St. Louis sponsored by the St. Louis Sports Commission. I had the opportunity to sit down with Coach Martin and then take questions from the audience. The great Olympian and East St. Louis native, Jackie Joyner Kersey, was on hand that day, and she got things started by introducing Coach Konzo Martin.
Good morning. How you doing? I'm honored to be here and first of all, I want to thank the Sports Commission for even asking me would I do this, because Konzo and I, we go way back, but I go a little further back. You know, he's a little younger. And our relationship started from when I was at Lincoln Senior High School, and my journey on going to college and doing the things that I was blessed to do. But Konzo was always on a great team, great leader in Coach Benny Lewis and some of his other coaches and a lot of his teammates, LaFonso Ellis. But what struck me with Konzo is that Konzo would call me at the time when I was at the height of my career, and he didn't believe that I would come back and help him with his basketball camp, talk to the young people. And I thought that was very important, because one of the things that we were taught when we were coming up was to give back of our time, come back and share the knowledge that someone else had taught us. And so when I came back, and from that point on, we just stayed in contact. And, you know, even when he was here at the other school and went to them other schools, and then them other schools, that I was always sending a note of encouragement, because the time when I was competing, you know, basketball was just basketball. I played basketball at UCLA, and I played on the women's team. You know, we weren't at that time as fierce like they were with the men, and how, you know, commercialized it is. You know, they don't call it that, but even though you don't college and you got the NC2A rules. But anyway, you know, it's a cutthroat business, you know, from the standpoint of trying to get the next player and people going into parents' homes and telling their parents this or that. But I can honestly say that from a young man growing up with humility, grace, and being very humble, that Konzo continued to instill that in his players from the standpoint of not just being great athletes, but being great people. And I want to say to each and every one of you, as you continue to open your arms to this young man and his whole coaching staff, because yes, they have a great team, but there's going to be some challenging times. There are some challenging issues going on in our society, but we all need each other. And I can't believe, you know, from the depth of my heart that God put this person at the university at this time. It's Konzo Martin. And Konzo, I praise you. You know, I'm always going to be there for you. And I hope each and every one of you continue to support the Mizzou team. You know, we talk about that. I say, you know, I'll support you as long as you're not playing the Bruins. But anyway, I wear the black, you know. But anyway, I just want to bring, you know, a great person before you, Konzo Martin. You know, a great leader, great man, great ambassador.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you.
How about that?
Oh, that was great. I'll have that check for you later, Jackie.
The Jackie mentioned that she did play basketball at UCLA. And if you think back to the history of basketball at Lincoln High School, you may have to go down to number 4 before you put a male on the list of top players to ever come out of Lincoln High. Deborah Thurston, Deborah Powell, Jackie Joyner Kirstie, LaFonso or Jelly Jones, which one goes into number 4?
I'm going with Fonz.
You're going with Fonzo. So we'll slide Jelly in at 5, maybe? Or are you and Jelly probably neck and neck?
No, he was better. He was better.
What do you remember about your early days here in St. Louis?
Well, you know, I grew up and I was born in St. Louis, Bourne's Hospital. And I don't know if any of you remember, I think they're torn down now, but we were raised in the Peabody Projects. Then my mom, she moved to the east side when I was about 4.5, 5 years old. Now my mom and dad's both sides of the family on the St. Louis side. They grew up off Grand Avenue. My grandmother had 14 kids on my dad's side. My mom, there was 5 of them. So, but she was the only one that moved to the east side. So if anybody asks, I'm from East St. Louis, Illinois. So, and it's a big difference, and even though I take pride on both sides, but I'm from East St. Louis. And just, you know, my time in East St. was a great experience as a young guy. And for me, and like watching Jackie growing up, that was a big deal for us because that was our NBA. Whatever it was Jackie Joyner Kirstie. And then it was a high school basketball team. And then it was East St. Louis Seniors football team. And that was our life. That was our world. It wasn't about what was on TV. That was what was going on in our lives.
She was really the first athlete that came back and gave back to the community. Am I correct?
Yes, and obviously Jackie's been a great inspiration in my life, but I grew up closely with Jackie's sister. We was in the same age, same grade, so we was always around each other. And just, I'll never forget the Seoul Olympics. Our whole high school kind of shut down. Everybody was in the arena or the gymnasium, and we were celebrating Jackie. And it was just a big deal, and you felt like I can dream. And I know what it looks like now because I see Jackie, and it was like you couldn't really touch her, but she was your own. But it was like, man, I know I can do it now. Obviously, she put a tremendous amount of work in. When you go from East St. Louis and you go away to California at 19 years old to start a life, that's not an easy thing to do. And she did it just to better herself, and she became one of the greatest athletes of all times. But it just made us dream big, and I felt like I could do it, but it was a lot of work behind it.
When did basketball become a part of your life?
You know, so, basketball, I think when I was in the fifth grade, but not serious until maybe the 7th, 8th grade, but I love playing baseball, and that was my thing. But what happened, we had a baseball practice, basketball practice. They were tying in together. And the basketball coach didn't let me go to baseball practice. And I was actually in tears. I went home, told my mom, because baseball was my thing. And that's where it kind of started from there, the basketball piece. But then when I got into high school, my high school coach, Benny Lewis, the great Benny Lewis, he was the basketball and the baseball coach. So he more or less made the decision for me. You're going to stick with basketball. So, because that was his main sport, too. So that's when it kind of shut down for me with baseball.
Coach Lewis was a tough coach that demanded a lot of you as players. How much did he influence your life? Can you even measure it?
Well, he was the first. You know, everybody talk about how many great coaches you had. You don't know if coaches are great when you're going through it, because you're just going through it. And the one thing my mom did a great job was instilling discipline. And my mom, you know, to this day, she never spanked me. She didn't do that. My mom, even in that environment, she never drank. She wasn't a smoker, any of that, even though we had tough times. But what she did was, you know, discipline, try your best to do right. It wasn't about being excellent or being perfect, because at her age, she understood that's tough to do. But just try your best to do right. Listen to adults. It doesn't matter whether it's a custodian or a doctor, whatever it is. Respect authority. So from that point on, everywhere I went, I was just always respectful for whoever was in front of me, whether it was an adult or not. Just respect them. So with Benny Lewis, he was a great coach, a great man. He doesn't do a lot of talking. He's one of those guys, this is what we're doing. This is how we're doing it. There's no questions asked. So I just did it, and it worked out for me. But he was a guy that spent hours, and I'm talking about from – and he did a great job. And I just had an event back at East St. Louis, and I spoke on his behalf. And one thing I gave him a lot of credit for, from Sunday to Thursday, for years, he'd open the gym up. So it's like – it'd be like 5 to like 8 or 9 at night. So – kept you off the streets. We didn't know it at the time, but it kept us off the streets. And you come in and play, older guys would come back and play, and he'd just sit there with a cigar. He didn't say anything. So if you got beat up a little bit, it was part of the game. And he kept us off the streets. But when it was over, you know, he had his van, and the other assistant coaches had their cars, so they took guys home. And that was for years. And that was just – it was a part of it. And I just told him, I really thank you, Coach, for all that you did, because he didn't have to do it. He didn't owe that to us, but every year he was getting guys in college, and we were just going through the motions as young guys. And all of a sudden, you look up years later, he has successful guys that became men in a tough environment.
This is the third time that you've had to build a staff, yeah. Right? You go to Missouri State, then you go to Cal or Tennessee, then to Cal. So it's actually the fourth time that you've had to build a staff. Take us through the process of the qualities that you're looking for in individuals when you're trying to build a coaching staff.
The first thing I look for is the character of a man, because it doesn't matter the talent that you have, because you can win. You can win at a high level with average guys. You can get guys better, because the talent, that'll take care of itself. But the character of a man, and what I mean by that, you want a guy that, if you don't value these young men, if you don't value your family, then you can't work on this staff, because we spend so much time together. And it's, you want one of those staffs, especially when you're taking over a program, you got to have a staff that you can learn to lose with. And be able to work with those guys, and not guys pointing fingers, not guys blaming somebody. Because in a time of transition, and I tell our guys all the time, don't expect to be liked. And it's very important to understand this. So now, I'm not really consumed with somebody else said, this is what we're doing, this is how we're going to do it, we're going to do it at this level, and we'll be consistent with it. And you got to have guys that understand that. It's not guys that have one foot out the door. If a guy's an assistant coach in your staff, he can't have one foot out the door to being head coach, because he got to find a new staff. This is not a staff for him. So you have to be all in, because the most important thing for our program are the young men in the program. We got to make sure these guys are successful. So I look for the character of a man first. And you talk, you know, character and integrity, those go hand in hand for me. And just to be trustworthy, I like guys that tell the truth. I mean, even in the environment I grew up in, I was exposed to a lot. I did a lot as a young age, a lot of stuff I try to forget. But I always try to tell the truth. You know, just it is what it is. I made a mistake. Coach K, I'll never forget when I was in college as a freshman, Coach Katie asked me, did I go to class one day? I didn't realize at the time he had the answer already. And I was just kind of sitting there like, he said, son, don't lie to me. Just tell me. If you didn't go, you didn't go. Coach, I didn't go. And that was it. I just said, I won't do it.
A lot of business leaders that are in the room today, and part of assembling a new staff means that you're also blending the talents of those individuals to become cohesive as one. How do you accomplish that?
Well, you like different guys. I don't want everybody like me. But what happens, after a while, they take on your personality as a coach because they're around you. They start saying some of the things that I say, especially guys that have been around me for a long time. And that's a good thing if you're saying the right things. But I think you have to allow an individual to be himself and whatever that is, because you hire them to do a job. You allow them to do a job. I'm not a guy that says be in office at this time. Now, I'll get in office. It'd be between 5:30, 6:30, just because I struggle sleeping. And ever since, for some reason, I got into this profession, I struggle sleeping. So
can't imagine why.
Yeah. So that part is tough. But so I'm in the office early just to try to get stuff done, and I always try to be prepared, because that's the one thing I don't want to go into a game you're not prepared, because that's a bad feeling. But as an assistant coach, whatever it is, do the best job. And I always just say, do your job. And now I give guys a criteria, what I think. But when I take over a program, probably the first month and a half, I kind of size guys up and just figure out what their strengths are. Because I don't want to pigeonhole a guy and say, you just do this. And I go back to my days as a player under Gene Cady, and I love Coach like a father. But Coach Cady, in June, be the first time we step on campus. In July, he's defined your role. We hadn't gotten into the season. And I never want to be like that, because you want people to be able to grow. My sophomore year, I was 0-for-5 from the three-point line. Maybe the first 7-8 games, Coach says, stop shooting threes, not for that game, but for the season. And that was it. You know, so, and I never want to be like that. So I allow guys to grow. And whatever your skills are, be the best you can be. But don't try to step on somebody's toes. I mean, communicate amongst each other. Have a relationship. And the hard part when you're in business, even in our sport, you have to be able to tell another guy, if you have an issue with him, pull him to the side. It doesn't have to be everybody's business. Communicate that first as a man, deal with it, and move on.
One of the most important members of your staff is really somebody that touches your players on a continuum. You could say the trainer, I say your strength coach, is a guy that's so important, because he's measuring really the mindset of individuals on a daily basis. You've got a great one in Nicodemus Christopher, who was with you at Tennessee,
yes,
followed you to Cal, and has now come to Missouri. Expand on his qualities.
Well, you know, when they first become a part of my staff, their assistant coach or whatever their role is, but after a while, in Nicodemus' case, he's like family. Really, that's what it is. He had opportunities, and I'm not keen with Golden State, with the Clippers. He just chose to be here. Now, it's a tough dynamic for him, because his wife, she worked for CSN Sports out in California, and she works closely with the Raiders. And so he made the move. So that's something we pray about right now, which has nothing to do with this here, but it's a tough deal. But that's just tell you the type of guy he is, the loyalty he has in him. But he works extremely hard, and he was the youngest BCS strength coach in America at 25 when I hired him at Tennessee, just because he had a fire burning inside of him. And I always want guys that want to be hungry. It doesn't matter how old you are, young you are. If you're good, you're good. If you have a desire to be great, let's make it work. And he had a passion. But the thing with Nicodemus as a strength and conditioning coach, he's very intelligent. And he does his homework, and he understands what the trainer job is. He understands from when the young man left the doctor's table, what it looks like, how do we rehab this. So, again, he graduated high school at 16, graduated college from Baylor at 19. So you're talking about a young man. He was homeschooled because he grew up in a tough environment, homeless for a while. Mom homeschooled him. She made it work. So he's very intelligent, but he works extremely hard. He knows his craft. Again, I don't know how long he'll be with us, because he's really good. And for me, it's about making sure his family's intact more than anything.
You obviously had a chance to touch your team for the first time this summer. How much work do you think you got done? How much do you think you accomplished during those limited opportunities with your kids?
Well, per NCAA rules, you're allowed 2 hours a week on the court. Now, you can break that up. Sunday's the first day of the week. You can break it up however you want to break it up. And you're allowed like 6 to 8 hours as far as strength and conditioning and also community events. So they clock all these hours. For example, you want to take a team to the hospital, those hours count. It just can't call a guy, but let's go to the hospital. So, but the 2 hours a week on the floor, you know, we always have a game plan how we go about it. The first week of June, the second week. This was the first time in my career after the first 2 weeks, and I just said to our assistant coaches, we have to learn how to compete. And we did a lot of 1-on-1, 3-on-3, and 5-on-5 workouts just to get guys competing, get guys to play hard, get guys to battle, because I felt like we didn't have a desire, a fire burning to compete and play 1-on-1 where somebody has to win or lose. And I think for older guys, you know, been beat up a little bit, and it, to be expected. But to understand they are good players. I mean, you guys played in some big minutes, big games. Then for our young guys, understand this is tougher than you think. So we really just spent a lot of time competing and battling. And we did what we did in the weight room, but I just felt like we got a lot done from that standpoint. And now once school started here, implementing offense, and this is the first time really, and I've always been a defensive guy, that we haven't worked on defense yet. So hopefully it doesn't look too bad in November.
How do you go about the process of really trying to blend those veteran players with this young, talented group that you brought in?
Well, I wouldn't say it's an easy thing, and I was blessed to be out of California. We brought in Jaylen Brown and Ivan Rapp, two highly touted high school guys with the dynamic of returning guys, and it wasn't easy starting out. We talked amongst, and the lesson I learned in that, we talked amongst the staff for making sure guys understand how to play with each other. These guys are just a part of the team like anybody else. But I didn't deliver that with the players and everybody, because sometimes you have to have those conversations in front of everybody because it's real. Like for example, yesterday Slam Magazine, which is one of the top magazines, did an article on the Porter family, all eight. So it's my job to make sure our players understand that this is a part of it. Goes with the territory, but it doesn't stop you from being a successful player. And what I did wrong in the past, I didn't talk about that amongst everybody to make it clear, because your game is your game. Michael's been blessed with gifts. I mean, God gave him certain gifts, but it doesn't take away from your gifts as a ball player. So it won't be easy, but we talk about it, because everything is good now because there's no adversity. But once adversity hit, when you're talking about guys over three starters last year, might come off the bench this year. I don't know that. Because they have to earn it. So that's a tough thing to deal with. So we'll see.
Part of what you're talking about, too, is getting guys to be able to defer, right? Guys that have been the man the first 2 years, and it could be a Terrence Phillips, could be a Kevin Purrier, could be a Jordan Barnett. But can they defer and check their ego when other guys may have an opportunity?
It depends on the individual. Everybody wants to be successful. Everybody wants the name of the paper. Everybody wants, you know, the glory and the praise. It's hard for a guy to go day to day, put his hard hat on, and just work and not receive those accolades. It's not an easy thing to do. So, again, it's our job to coach those guys through that and understand that. But you do that as a player through your work. Now, if you're not putting the work in, because the one thing that's clear to me, Jeremiah Tillman and Michael Porter Jr., they will work to the sunset. So you got to put the work in it. Yeah, they're very talented, but they put the work in it. I mean, those guys are exhausted. And not just when it's required, but after hours in the AM, they put work in all the time.
You mentioned getting guys to compete. What other concerns might you have at this stage?
Without naming specific players or anything like that, I think that the biggest concern is leadership right now. And I listened to my wife, another story. But my wife, she read this book, Extrovert, Introvert. Some of you guys might have read it, but... And my son is introverted, my oldest son. And she just said, you know, you can't make somebody be a leader if they're not a leader. You can help them, put them in position to be successful and learn some things. So for me, it's just trying to find a leader. Like we have a young man that does a great job leading, but he's not very vocal. So I won't beat him up to be vocal and then take away from other areas that he has. So you try to find a guy that's a great leader. It just... As a staff, we plug in where those guys don't fit in. I was the first captain in the Big Ten as a sophomore, just because it was in me. It wasn't like I was set out to be a captain. I just knew how to lead, and I want to win and be successful. So we're trying to find that. So I would think that's the biggest area of concern, find a leader. But the other thing is just shooting. Guys are making shots right now, but I think pound for pound we have as good a big guy as anybody in America, even though they're young, but they're very talented, and they do what they do. Outside of experience. So I think the perimeter, those guards, being able to make shots, take care of the basketball, make plays, and allow those big guys to play basketball because they are talented.
A couple more questions from me, and then we're going to open it up for questions from the audience. But Michael Porter Sr. came to town and was kind enough to spend some time with our company, HM Risk. And he talked about the meeting that the two of you had with your wives in Berkeley before he ever made the decision to join your staff at Missouri. You were the first coach, once he was released, to reach out to him. What were you trying to accomplish in that first meeting? Because knowing you just a little bit and getting to know you more and more, the more we're around one another, to me, it was more than basketball. Am I right?
Yes. This is the first time, really, I started involving my wife as far as recruiting. Now, we do home visits. She's there. My wife, she's a very intelligent woman, but so she's always around. But this is the first time to actually be a part of it, because I just realized over time she's better than I am. And I just felt like in this case, and this young man, and because his dad was coaching, just had my wife to sit in. And the things, you know, and I can honestly say this, and this is all sincerity. The first time we met, it might have been 2 hours and not one conversation about Junior. Really, it wasn't nothing. Just getting to know him because it has to work because it's not an easy dynamic when your dad is on the staff because as a young man, Junior, I want to get away. I want to spread my wings. I want to do something different. I've been homeschooled, so it's a different world for me. Now my dad's on the staff. How do I grow? Maybe I want to kick up a little dust on a Friday night. You know, just so you so many different things from a young man's standpoint. He's going through. My dad's on the staff. So for me, in talking with the senior, just and I had to sit down and say, how do you want to do this? Because it's the first time for me. I can treat you as if you're Junior's dad. Or you can be an assistant coach. However you want to do it, it's okay with me. And he just said, Coach, that's on you and Mike. I'm an assistant coach. Mike has to hear from you as a head coach. And so far, it's been good. I mean, and I try to treat it just like that. Now, it's still, for me, it's a learning process because sometimes I really, I get after. And, you know, I have to be careful because his dad's on the staff. And I'm saying stuff without saying it, you know, just, you know, but it's just, you know, it's a work in progress, but again, they've been great. And the thing that separates Mike, he's a worker. I mean, the kid, he works. He loves to play the game, and he wants to be a great player. It's not a guy that's talented. He wants to be a great player, and he puts the time into it. So it makes it easy.
God has blessed you with an amazing platform, hasn't he? How would you like to use that platform?
I think... The biggest thing, because you never really know who you are. I mean, I know my name and all that, but you don't know who you are until you're older, you're gone. Right. And people kind of identify that for you. I like to think a good guy. Not that I need somebody to say you're a good guy. That's my mom's gauge. You're a good person. If she says you're a good person, then I'm a good person. But I just think whatever's on the inside of me comes out on the outside. And just try to give and try to be a good person because life is tough. No matter your status level, your financial status, life is tough. You go through things. I was diagnosed with cancer at 26 years old, and it doesn't make me any different than anybody else. I'm just able to bless to be here 20 years later. But just try to study life and live it the right way and whatever it is and just value the time that I have. And I think that is the one thing that I try to tell our players, try to value the time you have because what happens, once I leave out of here, whatever that minute is, that's all I have. And then it becomes 2 minutes, hopefully, and God willing, it becomes three. And if not, then I'm eternal living with God. So however it goes, I'm fine with it. That's his decision. But just keep doing the work. As far as this coaching thing, I don't know if I'll be doing this long enough to say he's one of the greatest and all that because it takes a physical toll on you. I tell you, when you do it the right way, you don't break rules and you have passion for young men, you want to see them successful and you care about their feelings and you value them being successful, young men and men, and all of a sudden he has a wife, he has a kid, and he's 60 years old. If I'm living, he was successful. I don't want any pats on the back. I just want to say I did my job as far as helping him be a successful man. And that's all I really care about. But all the other stuff, the game within itself is that's a dog fight because it's a fight every day just to make sure guys go to class and be on time every day. And that's my job to make sure they do what they're supposed to do every day and have a level of gratitude in doing that.
Questions from the audience. Raise your hand and I'll come around with the microphone for you as you're starting to formulate those. I'll ask you one more question because I see the banner over on that side of the room, actually both sides of the room, talking about the SEC tournament in St. Louis. And I will say to this room, there are a lot of doubters in the Southeastern Conference that don't think that we can support this to the level that other cities have. Nashville has been a terrific home for the tournament because of its availability of resources to entertain fans away from the basketball court and also because of the attendance that they have within the arena. So we have a challenge, and we have one to meet. And I know we will, and I know we're going to prove a lot of people wrong with the way that we support this thing. But for you as the coach, knowing that, and you've been a part of that tournament, so you know what I'm talking about. knowing that it's going to be here in St. Louis in your first year, what's your reaction?
I think it's great. And I think at some point, I'm not sure how they contracted out, maybe in Nashville a couple more years, but I think this is a great place. St. Louis, a great city. I think our fans could jump on. I mean, you saw the success of the Missouri Valley Conference tournament. I can only imagine you bring the SEC tournament here in St. Louis, the passion, the fan base, the restaurants. I think it'll be great.
Questions for Coach Martin? Surely someone has a question. Yes, sir. Let me come to you.
Thanks, Mike. First of all, thank you for being here, and thank you all for being here. It's great. You touched on it a little bit. What are some of the challenges? You got kids or young men that come out of high school. They've been walking on water. And to get them to focus on the court and off the court, what are some of those leadership things that you do?
Oh, great question, because we deal with that with our young guys now. I think when you've when you're a talented player, when somebody is catered to you, I would imagine starting in the sixth grade on, when everything has been easy, allowed you to kind of move how you want to move. No confrontation. If things don't go right, I'll transfer. I'll go in this direction. And it's been smooth, so you never hit adversity. So for me, it's helping those guys understand when we say 8 o'clock, you're there at 8 o'clock. When you're supposed to be somewhere with a tutor, even though it's just a tutor, it's not 9:15, it's 9 o'clock. So we've had some guys doing some running, and they learned some valuable lessons. You know, and I'll tell you, because the hard part in this, and this is the truth, you see a lot of talented players around the country, and I can only imagine what some of those coaches go through, because some of them allow certain things, and then you look up 10 years later, a young man is struggling because he was allowed to go through the motions. Well, for me, that's where it stops, because this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing, because I always taught my grandmother, when you're in a restaurant, take your hat off, you know, in a restaurant, you know, tuck your shirt in. Thank you, yes, sir. Open the door for the ladies, women, whatever. I mean, just the etiquette. Hopefully I'm saying that correctly. You know, just, but I think all those things are very important. And if not, then I'm not doing my job, because if it's all just about winning ball games, that we're losing in the end because these young men are suffering and struggling. And what happens, they become somebody's husband, somebody's father. And it's like, man, that's a poor dad right there. Well, let's look back 15 years ago. Well, that's where it started. So I can't get consumed what they weren't taught growing up. That's not my place to say. Because my dad wasn't in the household, and I think my mom did some good things in teaching me values. So it doesn't matter who's in a household, teaching right and wrong, because it ain't just the parents, it's the school teachers. Somebody has to teach those lessons, and we allow that to go through the motions, then we're all cheating each other. Because hopefully at some point, with some of our players, they come work for one of your companies and eventually run one of them. So I got to do my job to make sure they're prepared for that.
Coach, back here in the back with a familiar face, Rich Gray.
Coach, first off, congratulations.
Thank you.
On this particular position. I'd like to ask you a question about the recruiting process and your ability to tap into areas of St. Louis or Missouri, maybe some of the advantages, disadvantages that you may have that you're bringing to the table that maybe we haven't had in the past?
Well, I think the thing, I think recruiting, more, if you're doing recruiting from a legal standpoint, I think it's about relationships. You have to build those relationships. Now, a lot of guys that are coaching in the St. Louis metropolitan area, these are guys that I played against coming up, was a little older, a little younger, so there's relationships there. And I've always come back home, so it's never been a case. Wherever I've been, I've always been back home. So this is my home. But I think in recruiting, you have to be genuine. But you also have to know it, because there are a lot of talented guys in the St. Louis area that went off to other schools. And sometimes that's okay. Some guys just want to get away. It's best for me to get away. There's nothing wrong with that. We can't get consumed with, we lost this guy, we lost that guy. It's not about that. It's about the right fit. And I've always been a guy, it doesn't matter how many stars, if he's good enough. We signed a kid, and I'll give you an example, when I was at Tennessee, Josh Richardson. We was this close to getting him at Missouri State, if I would have stayed. And all of a sudden, we take over Tennessee, and I had a great relationship with Josh. He was from Oklahoma. We take the job at Tennessee. I bring him with me at Tennessee, and everybody's like, and the other kid, Wes Washburn, who was at Northern Iowa, who made the big shots with Northern Iowa, those are two guys we would have had at Missouri State, two talented players. We take them to Tennessee. They're like, man, who are these guys? And all of a sudden, Josh about to sign a $60 million deal with the Miami Heat. Wes Washburn, who they thought couldn't play, was in the summer league with the Lakers. So it comes down to what you see with your eyes. And I always tell my assistant coach, evaluate with your eyes, not with what you read or not with what somebody else says. Because you have to see that, because he has to be able to play for me and he has to understand what I want. You can't go off what a piece of paper says a guy's ranked a four-star guy. We have guys that are supposedly ranked, might not even see the floor this year. So that doesn't matter. You can play or you can't play. But just really building relationships. And you have to be honest in those relationships.
Coach, over on this side of the room.
Appreciate you for taking the time out with us, Coach. My question is, how do you balance the expectations with the team? You're coming to a team that hasn't had a lot of recent success, but you have a lot of high-level recruits where there's a big expectation for the team. So how do you balance that with your players and with your staff?
Oh, good question. I think our staff is fine. We understand that, you know, because we had guys that have played at this level and know how tough it is. And I'll give you an example, and I like them. You know, with John Calipari, every year he's probably had, you know, the past 20 years, he's had a one or two recruiting class. And he has one national championship. And that just tells you how hard it is. When he's had, you know, his whole roster, if he got 13 guys on scholarship, 10 on McDonald's All-Americans. So that shows you how hard it is to be a national champion. But it also says you don't need a lot of those guys to win a national championship. So, but I think for our players, just I try to go one day at a time. And oftentimes we meet once a week about accountability, about character growth. What does integrity look like? What does it look like to be a man? And I try to hit them in so many different ways. Like, for example, I might ask the question, what happens if you have 5 minutes left with your parents? But I do all that to say, this really is just, as big as it is, this really is just a game. And at some point it'll be over. If you're done playing at the highest level and you're 35 years old, now you're talking about living 45 plus more years. You're just starting to live. So this is just a game. You got to put everything you can put into this game, and whatever happens, happens. And leave it at that. We move forward on to the next day. So to take away the fact that, oh, man, it's what the fans expect, I've never been consumed with that, because I know it's tough, and I know it's talented. Think about it. Michael Porter Jr. has had success. He's been homeschooled. So now all of a sudden I'm on a campus. I got to go to class in the classroom. I'm not used to it. Man, there's a lot of people around me. Then all of a sudden, I missed 5 or 6 shots in a row where I missed them behind the scenes at Tolton High School. Now all of a sudden, it's ESPN when I'm expected to be a top 3 pick. How do I deal with that? So those are the things we try to put him in adverse situations right now in practice. Put weight vest on his back to make the practice so hard. So come game time, okay, I know what it feels like. And I think those are the things we try to do. Just put him in situations. Understand this will not be easy. But to play with a level of confidence and a level of swagger, don't take that away. But this won't be a cakewalk.
Coach, over here to your left.
Thanks, Coach, for being here. Are you still, excuse me, able to draw on your experience as a player, specifically playing alongside a guy like Glenn Robinson, and relate to these guys? Or has the game changed so much since, you know, 25 years ago when you were playing for Purdue?
Oh, good question. I think, you know, if you compare, because, again, Mike has a chance to be a 1-2-3 pick in the draft, and Glenn was number one pick in 94. And if you compare it to Glenn, Mike's probably 2 inches taller. I think Glenn was an assassin. You know, Glenn, I mean, just his mentality was to completely destroy you. I mean, just but that's who he was when he was this small. Good or bad, growing up in Gary, Indiana, it made him that way. So when he stepped on the floor, it was a job. It was business. And I was trying to destroy you, not to win a game. Mike right now is competing to win a game. Glenn was trying to destroy you. And there was a big difference. Every night he stepped in. So if Glenn didn't score 30, it was a bad night. But it was 30, 10 rebounds, 2 blocks, and it was his mentality. And he was a humble guy off the floor. Never even talked about it after the game. It was like, this is what I do. I just blessed to do it, and that was it. I think the difference is, you know, you talk about kids aren't as tough nowadays. I don't agree with that part. I think what it is, and forgive me if I'm offending anybody, just my 2 cents. I think it went, when I grew up, it was parents, then the young men and women. Now it's kind of a partnership. You know, so when my mom said, do it, and my mom never spanked me anything. When she said, do it, it was done. There was no questions asked. And now it's just kind of, do you feel like doing this today? Do you want it? So now what happens is the part where the discipline is needed most, they don't get it until they step on campus in most cases. Not all. So it's the first time now you got a coach telling you, no, do this, do that. And it's like, whoa, I've never heard that before. Now he has to make some decisions. So I think the talent level is a lot greater because you have more big guys that are skilled. So the talent level, and I think guys still have a level of toughness, but not that old school toughness where you was trying to survive and get out of an environment. Because here's the other part. And if you're right, if any of you guys do any coaching, we used to say we were poor. Now, I was never poor. I thought it was, you know, the word was poor when we were growing up. Because we had things. We didn't have a lot of things. But nowadays, if a talented player, he's not poor anymore because he has a cell phone. And if he's a talented basketball player, now he has Nike, Under Armour, and Adidas gear. So he probably has 50 sweatsuits, 50 pair of sneakers. So there's no longer a kid that's poor anymore if he's talented. So that desire to be great and that fight and that hunger just to drive is no longer there. So now you're trying to get it back in him when he get to us.
Coach, back here to your right. Yes.
Good morning, Coach. You talked a lot about, well, not a lot, but a little bit about not being able to sleep very well given this job. Coaches at your level, of course, have pressure to win and win immediately or whatever the case may be. But I see, and this sort of popped into my head, seeing your face on every magazine here, that you have an added pressure. And I think that you have sort of had to deal with this before. You could go undefeated, win national titles every year that you're at the school, but there will be expectations of you beyond that that may be unfair. Like, you almost have to be a transcendent figure, that you not only have to coach these young men to be good players and good people, but good players and good people in their communities and somehow transform those communities. So how do you handle those times when people will ask you about things that have nothing to do with, you know, your team or your position? You know, when they'll ask you about, well, what's going on in North St. Louis, or why aren't you doing this in Kansas City, or what do you think about this person or that person, or what do you think about this law or that law? How do you not let that added pressure consume you and consume what you're trying to do at Mizzou?
Oh, great question, and I'll kind of answer it all over the place if I can. But, you know, the one thing that when I wake up at night, when I go to bed at night, I pray, obviously, about certain things. When I wake up in the morning, I would just say, God, give me the necessary tools to do battle, whatever that is, because you build me to do battle, and I'm ready for any challenge. So with that being said, we talk about a lot of things with our players. We talk about anything, and what I try to stay away from in a public platform is talking religion and talking politics. Now, we talk about that with our players because they open up the platform, they want to talk about it, and they give my 2 cents, and we talk about that. But publicly, I stay away from those things because in some ways you offend somebody. Now, and I give you an example, and this is not information I like to put out there, and I learned a lot from Jack as far as giving back. She's done a great job. We kind of follow her lead in East St. Louis. We do different things. But the one thing we did as a team, we sent a lot of things down to Houston with Harvey, and our sports information director is in, and I just told him, we don't need to do that in the public. Let's go behind the scenes, do that, because I don't need any fanfare behind that, because that's not why we were doing it. So if you look on it, in some schools, oh, we sending this, we sending that, we send it, but we don't need that. I don't want that, because I don't do it for that reason, because at the end of the day, whenever that time comes, when I lay to rest, I just want to be able to know I did the work. I did the work that God asked me to do. But as far as public platform, it's what it is. And one of the reasons why I don't sleep is just because I want to be successful, and my wheels are always turning, not because of pressures of a job. I mean, and I don't allow any pressure outside of what I put on myself. So I've never been consumed by that. I haven't read a press clipping since 1993. So I couldn't tell you what's going on about me, good or bad. You know, just, and to be totally honest with you, so that never bothers me. I mean, you're here to do a job, and you have to stand as a man and do your job to the best of your ability. If it doesn't work, then Mizzou will find somebody else to do the job. It's no hard feelings. We keep moving. We keep plugging.
Couple more questions. Here's one back here.
Coach, first of all, on behalf of Mizzou fans everywhere, thank you for restoring the roar in Tiger basketball.
Thank you. Thank you.
I had the opportunity to watch Jeremiah Tillman a few times over the past couple of years, and I've seen some clips for you guys to put out of Mizzou basketball. How different does he look today than he did a year ago as a basketball player?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't watch him a year ago because he was committed to another program, and I was in California, so I didn't even watch him. So the recruiting really started when he got released from Illinois. So, but he's a good guy. And the one thing I was saying is just poor judgment on my part because of what you hear. Because, you know, I met Jeremiah when he was in the ninth grade when I was at Tennessee. Didn't really recruit him at California. So then when he gets out of his commitment, you build a relationship with him. One of the nicest guys I've been around. I can truly say that, not just because he's from East St. Louis, but he has a big heart, great guy. He had a hiccup here in June, but one of the best I've been around. It's a joy to coach him. The guy just works. It's just all business. No excuses, no complaints, just worked. And if he stays on the path, he won't be on campus no longer than 2 years if he stays on the path. He's a talented ball player. He's a great person.
Any other questions? So let's go through some individuals, just kind of rapid fire as we wrap it up. You've talked about Michael. You've talked about Jeremiah. Give us a sentence on Jontay.
6'11", you know, 245, 250. At that size, he shoots the ball. He can shoot it really well for a big guy. So he has a chance to stretch that defense.
Blake Harris.
Very similar, not like, but John Wall at 6'3", and he's fast. Got to improve his shot, but he's big and he's fast.
C.J. Roberts.
Combo guard, you know, I call him a little pit bull, a little feisty guy, but he gets after it, not afraid of challenges.
Cassius Robertson.
Can shoot the ball, and I would say right now a leader, but experienced veteran.
Is there any chance in the future that there'll be a series between Mizzou and St. Louis U?
If it works, never say never. And I say that with all sincerity. I just think, for us coming to St. Louis, you already have Illinois here. I mean, if it works, I mean, St. Louis is a great city. I don't see nothing wrong with it, but it has to work.
You have
to gain from it.
How about Missouri State?
Not as long as Paul Luss is there, no. Because Paul Luss, I mean, because he's a great friend of mine. Paul Luss and I grew up together, I mean, for years, and he's a great friend. There's no gain for either program in that situation.
Coach Stewart used to always say when people would call in and say, when are you going to play the Bears? He'd say, when they start playing Drury.
Good point. No, they might try to play Drew, so I won't say that.
Any other final questions? One more. How about the bragging rights from Rich McBride?
It should be good. And I hadn't seen Illinois Ross. I knew their guards were pretty good. And they had some, you know, three or four returning starters. Outside of that, I couldn't tell you about it. The most important thing for us is getting better than Northern Iowa. I mean, Iowa State when it presents itself.
We are so happy that you were the head basketball coach.
Thank you.
At the University of Missouri, not only because of the way you go about your business, but the person that you are and the way that you conduct yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, round of applause for Konzo Martin.
Thank you.
Mark Schreiber, ladies and gentlemen.
Also, a hand for Mike Kelly. What a heck of a job he did with that. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Coach Martin.
I'm Mike Kelly. Thanks for listening to the Inside Mizzou Athletics Podcast, brought to you by Shelter Insurance.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Mike Kelly, brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.